Welcome to the second Scotland 2050 podcast with me, Barry Cunning, and
Martin Woodfield, MSP for the South of Scotland, here hopefully to keep Barry entertained and put a little bit of words of wisdom, or if not, humour.
Humour and wisdom, I like the sound of that. So obviously we are 8 days into the new year and it's politics as normal, it's business as normal when it comes to politics. It's been pretty full on, I think, for various reasons, but I think we should start with kind of Monday with Anna Sarwar's speech, kind of outlining his vision and what he thinks should happen by the next Scottish Parliament election. So do you want to just tell us a bit about what was said?
And well, I think, you know, we're at an interesting time, and of course, Happy New Year, if we're still allowed to say that.
Absolutely.
But we're also in this interesting time in Scotland, sort of 25 years from devolution last year.
Yeah.
21 years sitting in the new Parliament. And we'll also have a period where there's almost a cycle to political leaders and the kickoff to the new year. There has to be a New Year's speech. It has to cover what is important. But I think this country is crying out to hear new ideas, new directions. And I think that really encompassed what Nas was saying on Monday. Interestingly, at Glasgow University, you know, not randomly chosen because, you know, the university sector, the tertiary sector, is so important to Scotland's future, particularly over the next 25 years.
Yeah.
And there is something about sitting in buildings. I mean, it was Glasgow University's birthday only yesterday. But sitting in a building in which, you know, great people who've done some great thinking, have produced some great things, have done so because of their love and affection for Scotland, their love and affection for the United Kingdom, their love and affection for knowledge, for fact, which I'm sure we will get onto as a word later on. And to listen to Anas talking about the need for a new direction, I think was very powerful, because when you speak to people, be it historically in the pub over a pint, but actually more frequently now, you know, sitting, drinking coffee, tea, chatting as you wander along, people are very concerned about the future.
Yeah.
You know, to the question, do you feel better off now than you did 14, 15, 16 years ago?
Yeah.
The answer is sadly, no, they don't. But that's now also come with a concern about what the future will hold, not just for them, but for their parents, for their children. And I think that Anas on Monday managed to capture, you know, in one part, the fear that exists, but also the hope that there can be a better tomorrow. And that's why we need a new direction.
Yeah.
And that's why it was such a powerful speech and a powerful institution, which spoke to so many of the answers that we need to see going forward.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think for a long time, we haven't had hope in Scottish politics. And I think what obviously I was there Monday and Anas's speech was really good. And what appealed to me and my take-home message was about that new kind of thinking. As in, how do we chart a new direction for Scotland? How do we make things better for people? And it was great to hear that. And, you know, obviously time will tell if that's the case, but it was great to hear it in the first instance. Obviously, we've got the budget come up pretty soon as well, and Anas did announce that the Scottish Labour Party will be abstaining from that budget vote. Could you tell us why that is?
Well, the budget's coming up because this is budget season. Why are the Labour Party abstaining from it? Because what we've ended up with is a performative discussion about the budget, not about what's in it, the cogs, the minutiae, how it will affect people, but generalistic statements that, you know, were bordering on, quite frankly, the outrageous about the risk that the budget would fall, the government would fall, the parliament will fall, we will have to have an election, we'll then have to have another election in 26. Is there a need to sow seeds? It's interesting that you commented on a lack of hope. You know, is it sensible for politicians to sow seeds of potential despair and anger? Everyone remembers, you know, the great members of the public, not another election.
Yeah.
And that comes from a heartfelt belief that what people need is stability.
Yeah.
And when we look at this budget, it was an opportunity to take the country in a new direction. It comes at a time with a Labour government at Westminster, which has provided unprecedented funding both this financial year and next financial year to the Scottish government. And Was that opportunity grasped? Was that thistle? Is it a thistle? Grasped? I don't think so. I think what we had was a workaday budget to get them over the next problem that's confronting them.
Yeah.
And one of the great tragedies is that instead of a broad, wide-thinking political view from the government, we're getting immediate answers to problems that they've created that they're not sure or imaginative enough to see how to get out of it. So the reality is that the budget was always going to pass.
Yeah,
I mean, to be fair, John Swinney is the only person who's managed to fail to get a budget through at the first attempt in the Scottish Parliament. But there certainly was never that risk at this time. And I think Anas was right to say, look, put aside the chance, the fear that a budget will fall, even though some of the more dire consequences of it were never going to come about. Let's put that to one side and let's look and ask ourselves, how does this improve everybody's day-to-day life? How does it make your future stronger or better? And the challenge is that the SNP government have to explain that, then have to deliver it. For 3 years, they've had to come back and say, by the way, our budget was wrong for X, Y, and Z. Never their own responsibility, obviously, and never anticipated. Though, to be fair, many people did point out the problems coming down the line and have had to reevaluate their budget with effectively cuts to make sure it comes in, because it is a legal requirement that the Scottish government balance the budget here in Scotland. And I think, you know, for many good reasons, that's a very, very important rule to abide by.
No, absolutely. And I think it's interesting when we talk about the budget, because I couldn't help but notice on Monday that John Swinney said if this budget isn't approved, it could result in medicine shortages. Now, isn't that within itself quite a worrying thing for a First Minister to say, if this doesn't get approved, we'll have no medicine to help people, or there'll be a dire shortage? And it just seemed really quite extraordinary for the First Minister to actually speak that way.
I think it's, and that speaks to what I was hinting at previously.
Yeah.
That politicians have a responsibility to be honest. Now, I don't know how many politicians have said that even since New Year. Certainly, if we go back after last year, everyone, there's a premise. And so it should be.
Yeah.
If politicians aren't going to be honest, then, you know, where are we? Everyone should be honest. But along with that, there comes a responsibility about what is it that you're trying to do. And John Swinney was on the airwaves yesterday saying how Anas's view was it was all political posturing. When the reality is that it was a commentary on a budget, it was a statement about what this year and going forward should hold from Anas. And then we have the First Minister saying there's a risk if there are not enough medicines. As we approach the Christmas recess, there were huge challenges with availability of medicines across Scotland and across the United Kingdom. But that's supply issues. It's not funding issues. And if the first responsibility of a government is to take care and protect its people, if John Swinney is saying he was incapable of presenting a budget that couldn't lead to anything other than medical shortages, they're in a very serious place.
Absolutely.
But there are people who rely on medicines who will hear that, who will just hear the one part of it. And even if it is just for a fleeting moment, start panicking about what happens if. Now, is it responsible for a politician to put anybody who sits within their community that they're responsible for in that fear, even for microseconds?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Absolutely not.
I think it's you know, perfectly reasonable to say that the Scottish government are required to put forward a balanced budget by law. The Parliament have to pass that.
Yeah.
It is the choice of the Parliament about whether it is passed, but it requires a majority. And if any group abstain, then that majority needed to pass it obviously comes down.
Yeah.
Yes, the Scottish government find themselves in a minority at the moment because of choices that previous first ministers have made. But was there ever a reality that the budget would fail to the point that government and Parliament would collapse? No. I mean, it's just not the case. And to even go there, I think, shows a level of concern about your own budget that perhaps should really be unmerited, given that you wrote the thing. you've had the discussions with people, you know what's needed. But that's, and it, you know, it's interesting. It talks of the importance, indeed, of this podcast, but also the importance of looking forward, that what we have seen from this government is increasingly short-term answers to short-term problems that they have found themselves in. Neil Gray had to come yesterday with regard to the winter crisis in the NHS, something that Jackie Bailey and others have been pointing out is coming down the line. And we're not really into winter yet. We have, you know, huge pressures that have been brought about by decisions that have been made in the past. On top of that, we have the challenge of the current flu outbreak, which is putting increasingly large numbers of people into hospital because of the needs. And only this morning, there was a sort of acknowledgement from the First Minister on Good Morning Scotland that that is now having knock-on effects to the NHS. What a surprise, we have flu in winter.
Absolutely.
and so there has to be some level of personal responsibility, government responsibility, to say that mistakes were made and this is what we're doing going forward.
Absolutely. I think it's about responsibility and accountability, and that was something that also Alice spoke about at his launch on Monday as well. And I think just to kind of echo concerns about the kind of medical shortages, I mean, John Swinney has been an MSP for a good chunk of my life, and I did find it incredibly surprising when the First Minister said, if it's not approved, it could result in medicine shortages. It was very, in my opinion, very Puritan. It was like, if you don't back it, it's not our fault, it's yours. It just seemed a bit strange to come out with that statement.
Yeah, I think you encompass the multifaceted reason that he did it. On one level, he wanted to articulate a threat that was understandable to people outside of the political circle, even though the risk of it was never there. He wanted to raise the importance so that journalists rightly hold other political parties to account to explain why you're not supporting the budget. And here in Scotland, there is a difference between actively supporting a motion in the parliament by voting yes, or actively disagreeing with it by voting no, or actively saying, we will give this space, but we're holding you to account, which is an abstention vote in the middle. But by abstaining on the budget, you therefore lower the level that's needed for it to pass. So to go back to the point that there was never a real risk that it failed, I think it was an unfortunate and, you know, quite frankly, regretful way of trying to explain a false importance, which for people listening to 20 seconds of a news headline, half a snippet of a quote, reading it as a top line, make them go, I need to go to my GP and renew my prescription. Absolutely. I need to do this. I need to protect myself against that. And, you know, for a First Minister who's articulated on many occasions the importance of the NHS and the importance of reducing the waiting lists, the importance of lowering the pressure, to try and use that, I think, is disrespectful.
It's almost like scaremongering, essentially. And that's maybe maybe the Scottish public would see it. But I think your answer about the abstention vote is absolutely great, because I think a lot of people don't understand when political parties abstain. They go, well, you just haven't voted for it. But I think you give a really good explanation as to why that is there. And I guess something we need to touch base on is Elon Musk, owner of X. And, you know, I'm writing a piece for The Scotsman, which is due out tomorrow, very much about this issue. And I have to be honest with you, since I've came back from New York, I find myself really thinking about, you know, what's changed. All I see on X is this right-wing propaganda, really horrible stuff. The comments about Jess Phillips, you know, it's misogynistic. All that stuff is just racist. It's just wrong. And I think we should always be calling it out whenever we hear it, whenever we see it. And in my opinion, Elon Musk has very much got daddy issues. His own dad said, just ignore him. But fortunately, we can't ignore him because he has the world's biggest social media platform. So, you know, what do you think we should be doing about that?
I think there's a number of levels to that which are affected by, you know, decisions that Facebook have made with regard to fact-checking, with regard to these. But I think to start off, where from a personal point of view, because I know Jess Phillips,
Of course.
I think it's very important to put out there that anybody who puts somebody else in danger, needs to think very carefully about why they're doing it.
Yeah.
I do not believe that Elon Musk, you know, knows Jess Phillips anywhere in depth enough to have made an assessment about how dangerous the comments that he has made and associated himself with towards her. We are rightly, absolutely rightly outraged when politicians are targeted.
Yeah.
We have had the deaths of some potentially very great politicians and great politicians in the not too distant past. You know, and to go back, you know, very powerfully to Joe Cox's words, we do have more in common.
Absolutely.
And it is massively important that anybody, irrespective of their ability to speak to small or large numbers of people, are incredibly careful about what they say, because the consequences of it, we know, can sadly be tragic.
Absolutely.
But also, there is the other side of it, which then gets into the wider discussion of, is this an attempt to curtail the view and opinions of some politicians who are responsible for the safety of people from somebody who has other reasons to say what he does and in the way that he chooses to say it, and that, from my own point of view, appears to be wanting to stir up a disingenuous argument on whatever will be listened to and articulated the most. And again, in a sense, it goes back to the, do you make threats about the availability of medicine? Because at the end of the day, you know, people are concerned when they look, to go back to your very earlier statement, have people lost hope? People are very concerned about what the future holds. And by the very nature, they're looking to find and to see where responsibility lies. And I think one of the things that politicians have to accept, and this goes to, who do you accept money from? You know, how do you run a campaign? What is it you put on your bar charts in the leaflets that you shove through letterboxes? There has to be a personal responsibility if you want to stand up and say you want the privilege of representing a community at any level of government, from, you know, community council all the way up. If you want the privilege of doing that, part of it comes with a responsibility to sometimes to say, I am not going to do this because it's not true. I'm not going to do this because I don't know whether it's true or not. I'm going to put this view out there. You can, if you don't want to put yourself forward for democratic election, just stand up and scream and shout.
And say what you want.
And then and say what you want. And, you know, interestingly, you know, the phrase freedom of speech and the power and importance of that, and for Americans, they will then hold up their constitution. I always think it's slightly interesting that the freedom of speech is actually talking about actions of the government rather than actions of corporations. But, you know, there is a responsibility. But there is a real challenge about how politicians, how communities respond to that. And, you know, the simple answer that always comes out is, oh, it's about education. But it's actually about conversations. It's about conversations with people who feel they're being, you know, left behind or being abandoned, as to why, you know, if that is the case, what can be done to support them?
Yeah.
And it doesn't need the look at something else, whether it exists or not, and be envious or angry towards that. It's about how do we support our communities. So, you know, I live in Preston Pans in East Lothian, a community that has a very heavy industrial background. And there are parts of the community that I live in that are more challenged, or as challenged as just about anywhere in Scotland. But I look at all the brilliant work that's done by community groups. I look at all the brilliant work that's, quite frankly, done by neighbours and families to help and support that. And that's where we look, rather than look outwards and blame the outsider, the unknown, the different for it. Because to go back to where I started this answer with Joe Cox, we do have more in common.
Absolutely.
And we are human. We need to practice and use empathy. And we need to make decisions that people can see, articulate, a better hope for them in the future that doesn't come at a massive price for somebody else.
I think that's really interesting. And I think, again, with Elon Musk, do you think he just doesn't care? Is it a lack of awareness? Is he just doing it for whatever reason? I mean, it is quite concerning. A guy with the biggest social media platform in the world can just put out a tweet and that's all everybody's talking about. So obviously we want to keep a vision of hope, but all people are talking about is Elon Musk. And again, last night Jess Phillips was on ITV with our friend, the deputy political editor, Anuska, where Jess did say, yeah, she is concerned about her safety because of these comments. Now, you mentioned Joe Cox and David Amos as well. Yeah. This is serious stuff.
Yes.
Now, how do we, as a society, challenge Elon Musk? How do we do it in a way where we go, look, that's just not on? What should we be doing? Should politicians be coming off X and say, right, that's it, we're taking our stance, we're coming off it? Or what should we do?
Well, we see the first Scottish Council coming off X.
Remshire, wasn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, and then an interesting discussion about whether or not the schools, and I know that the council having discussions with their schools about it, there is a historic view that where someone disagrees or puts out views like that, then part of it is about actually engaging with that and countering the factual inaccuracies and things like that. I think with social media the way it is at the moment, we are perhaps for the first time confronting something that is at such a large scale that to do that is nigh on impossible. And I think part of it is about you know, holding people to account for what they have said, whether or not they're politicians. I think part of it is about engaging with communities and groups who are feeling concerned and looking to, you know, what they may perceive as simple solutions, engage with them about why there is more complexity in it, but make them part of the decision making. Because I think one of the things that Elon Musk, where he finds an audience, is in people who go, I'm not listening to, oh, I agree with that. And it's about then
kind of left behind,
it's then about engaging with them about why the statements that, you know, people, Elon Musk amongst others, make are firstly factually incorrect, but secondly, actually, they are not the answer that people think they are. We can cast our minds back to a bus that drove round and said, this is how much money is going to go into the NHS stuff.
And that's a really good point. And I think, you know, again, you know, top Elon Musk, you had Keir Starmer on Monday as well, kind of providing a rebuttal. What do you think about that? I mean, I personally think Keir did the right thing. He had to say something. He had to take it on because we can't have it. Now, this is a guy, again, going back to Elon Musk, who's going to be, what, in charge of Dodge, Department for Government Efficiency? I mean, even the name, I mean, come on, Dodge, do me a favour, you know.
The voters in the United States have expressed the view that they've done, you know, I am disappointed in that, but the reality is that there is a president-elect who comes in. There is going to be changes, and it is about engaging with those individuals. It's not about ignoring them, because to go back to the responsibility, if you put yourself up for election, is there is a personal responsibility about the choices that you make. And part of that is about engagement to try and make a better and stronger future going forward. Would you want to be where we're starting now if you could have gone back 100 years? Of course, you know, no one would want that. But we are in a situation where there is a president-elect who will need to be engaged with, will need to be discussed. But it is about having leaders who will have those discussions, the ones that happen in public, the ones that apparently may happen on X, formerly known as Twitter, or Facebook, or wherever it is. But it is also about those discussions that happen around those more public events and those situations, because at the end of the day, the people that you want to represent you in those rooms are people who are fundamentally going to fight for a better and stronger future. You know, from the Westminster government for the United Kingdom, from here within Scotland, for a better and stronger future for the people of Scotland. And it's about having confidence in those politicians, in the parts that you don't see, that they are saying what they have promised they will say to you at the doorstep, that they are doing what is right. And often the phrase adults in the room is used, having taught for such a long time and having huge confidence in our young people.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's the empathetic people who are in the room that can reduce the level of pressure and actually get down to the point of what is it that is the solution that works for the people that you represent.
Absolutely.
Donald Trump presents as a very strong business type negotiator.
Mm.
We see that with the comments about Greenland. We see that with the comments about the Panama Canal.
Yep.
The response to those have to be, you know, from those that are articulating other views, exactly why that is an unrealistic expectation, and to do it in a way that keeps discussions going, reduces the pressure, and hopefully comes with a result that's acceptable. If we think about Greenland, to the Greenland people, the Inuit people themselves, because at the end of the day, you know, it is their decision.
They have
a right to make it, and their decision needs to be supported. And we see that when we look at the conflict, you know, that's crossed again into this new year in between Ukraine and Russia, about it, the decision of the Ukrainian people and their representatives that are important and need to be listened to.
Yeah.
There are consequences in making choices where you choose to abandon people, and you need to think extremely carefully if that's really what you want to do.
Yeah.
President-elect has confirmed he can sort this out in one day. You know, it'd be interesting if that day can be sooner rather than later, and in a way that's acceptable to the people of Ukraine.
100%. So I think kind of sticking with kind of Donald Trump and kind of Elon Musk kind of ties in, so Trump takes power in 12 days' time. From a geopolitical perspective, what do you think that means for the UK-US relations, given what Elon Musk's been saying, what Trump's been saying? What do you think that means for us? Challenging times, Pete Manderson, obviously now the ambassador, which is going to be interesting.
I'm not sure there's ever been a period of time where world geopolitical has been anything other than extremely difficult. It is, on one level, the ultimate three-dimensional chess. But it's also about people understanding what your driving factors and expectations are and who you're responsible to.
Yeah.
You know, one of the privileges of being in power is that you have to make hard decisions.
Yeah.
And some people will disagree with those decisions and some people will agree with them. The reason that you make the decision is because you, on advice, know it is the right decision to make and stand by that. So with a new president coming in the US, with changes, you know, looking likely across Europe with regard to prime ministers and presidents in the not-too-distant future, on a wider scale, changes around the world, you know, it's not going to be easy, but it was never easy. But that doesn't mean that you shy away from it. It doesn't mean you don't engage. It doesn't mean you don't talk. It doesn't mean you don't explain. It doesn't mean you don't defend. It means you do so with an understanding that the consequences of a world that in reality is a much smaller entity than it was 100, 200, 300 years ago, that there are more consequences for decisions. Mm. But that's why you need empathetic people in the room. See, I avoided adults in the room. You need empathetic people in the room.
Empathetic adults.
You need people who, you know, look to experts for advice.
Hmm.
You need people who then discuss and challenge themselves about the decisions they make.
Yeah.
And then you go out and you make those decisions happen by the way that you want to do it.
Yeah.
And you do it courteously. You do it listening to the other side. You defend the position.
Diplomacy. Yeah.
It is diplomacy. Yeah. It's, you know, in some ways, I suppose, I think it's, you know, maybe it is back to that classic what diplomacy should always have been, which then makes for a very interesting discussion about the current diplomat that's been chosen to go to the US.
Podcast.
Not easy. Yeah, absolutely.
The local podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But it is about having people who understand that complexity.
Yeah.
And understand the consequences of the choices they make because there's a responsibility for it.
It's really interesting, kind of sticking with the American theme here, because it was Stuart MacDonald, who was the MP, SNP MP for Glasgow South, wrote a piece for the, I think, the Spectator, where he basically said that, you know, the Scottish Parliament could be the first election where Elon Musk or Donald Trump could kind of try to shape as a kind of test case, what do you think about that? Do you think that's something that could happen? Could we see the Donald come over to Scotland in 2026 and, you know,
stand on the platform with somebody? Democracy, you know, is the best we've got at the moment, to coin an older phrase. We have seen a number of elections where those outside of the electorate have sought to interfere in it. I think, you know, at different levels, there's the sort of subversive social media level, the messaging level. Yep. There's been more obvious interference in ballots, and then there's been, you know, incredibly obvious interference in it. And at the end of the day, it goes back to that responsibility that I think you have as an individual politician that's seeking election, because someone would choose to invite someone to stand next to them.
Yeah.
You choose to step onto a platform with other people around there, and you have to take the responsibility for doing that. And there is a risk. There's always a risk with democracy. It is incredibly fragile.
Yeah.
The risk that we're seeing at the moment is one of very obvious money expenditure being used to alter or attempt to alter an outcome. That requires those people, if they are benefiting from it, to stand up and say, actually, I'm benefiting from this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I either choose not to benefit from it or whatever. At the end of the day, that, you know, we have the Electoral Commission, we have various bodies, we have registration requirements that say that you publish where money comes from. All of that actually boils down to the individual politician saying yes or no to an offer for help, or if the offer is not made and is shoved down, to stand up and say, no, this is not what this election is about. Because at the end of the day, you know, and Stuart's right about this, come 2026, it's an election for people who have a vote here in Scotland to decide the direction they want for Scotland going forward. And it should be their decision.
Absolutely.
And their decision based on facts and based on views and ideas expressed by political parties about what that direction should be. You know, do they want a better future than the one that, you know, is potentially out there at the moment? And that should be for the electorate of Scotland to decide. 100%. There is a requirement on the Parliament in Scotland. There is a requirement on the Electoral Commission. There is a requirement on the Scottish Government that we allow those elections to take place in a free and open way as possible, where, you know, people who are casting a vote have the opportunity to ask the questions they want, and they get the answers from the people that are seeking their vote, rather than something external putting forward a view or an opinion, which, you know, who would think may not be in the best interests of the electorate who the message is aimed at. but he is right that it is something that needs to be monitored and observed. But I think it goes back to, you know, my view that the obligation rests on those that are seeking election. Yeah. And actually, if someone is open to, you know, massive external support from people who I question their genuine interest in Scotland and Scotland's future, or indeed the United Kingdom, or indeed Europe, or indeed whatever,
the world.
Then those who are asked to vote should perhaps question why they're doing it and who they actually would be responsible to. Would it be to the community that have voted for you, or would it be someone else, somewhere else?
Completely agree with that. And very quickly before we wrap up, Martin, can you tell me very quickly what got you into politics, and what advice would you give somebody who maybe wants to stand for an MSP, councillor, name it?
What got me into politics? Are you ever not in politics? I grew up in a household which was very politically aware, although not in a sense through people who were elected or stood for office. Just a normal mum and dad, massive conversations, grew up in a very sort of theatrical background and stuff. When I came up into Scotland to become a primary school teacher, I got interested in the community council. Again, that's about representation at a lower level, but actually a very direct representation to people. And had the privilege of chairing Prestonpans Community Council And then when Theresa May, for those who can remember, went for a weekend away in Wales and came back and announced a bit of a surprise general election, there were a lot of people running around for candidates. And I had long and loud discussions about who should and shouldn't stand, to the point where Ian Gray, the then MSP, said, look, Martin, will you either put your name in the hat or will you shut up, because I want to go and have my tea.
You got a tap on the shoulder.
No, it was quite the opposite. I went to him and said, no, I think we should get people from here, there and everywhere, rather than a tap on the shoulder. So I chucked my name in the hat and then went and explained to my family what I'd done, and had the privilege of being the MP at 2017 to 2019.
Well, that's where we first met Brexit. Wrestlers,
that's
wasn't
right. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. The Brexit years. I'd say I have the T-shirt. I think I've got the scars as much as anything else for that period of time. And then the opportunity arose to stand for the Scottish Parliament when Ian Gray stepped down and managed to get in on the list for the South of Scotland, which is an incredible privilege. And, you know, at the end of the day, it is about bringing a voice into a chamber that often isn't heard. Yeah. I'm particularly passionate about young people because I do genuinely think they have so many of their answers if we would just listen to them. Yeah. Fought very hard for the UNCRC, will continue to fight hard to make sure it becomes a very useful tool for young people to get themselves not just around the table when the decisions are being made, but actually being at that table and being part of the decision makers that affect them. Yeah. Because, like, you know, so many, if people feel part of the solution, even if they disagree with it, they will be bought into it. If they're excluded from that decision making, why should they accept it? You know, there's no desire to. And I think that, you know, applies to all of our communities in the wider sense. And that at the end of the day, the people who are affected by the decisions are the people who should be there, feeling part of and being part of that actual decision making, because if it goes against you, it's harder. If it goes for you, you'll work harder to keep the people who are feeling excluded in on it.
I think you're absolutely spot on. Obviously, this podcast is called Scotland 2050, so it's about the future of Scotland. Where do we want to be by 2050? So I think getting someone from the Scottish Youth Parliament would be quite a good idea to have a conversation as well. So Martin Whitfield, MSP for South Scotland, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.